Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
The Blue Collar BS podcast helps blue collar business owners like you build a business that'll thrive for decades to come by turning that blue collar BS into some blue collar business solutions.
In this episode, you're going to learn that you need to stop paying yourself last, about the get the job, do the job, and the big question, did you make money? How that you are not the most important part of your business, and about this 10-hour challenge.
Our guest today is Aaron Mills, an award-winning money guy working to keep the contractor's entrepreneurial dreams alive. We hope you enjoy the show. And welcome back to the show. Welcome back, everyone. And Brad Herta, how are we doing today?
We are fantastic, Steve. What show are we on today, Steve?
We are on the Blue Collar BS podcast.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
It's been a hot minute since I had to do the introduction. We always love that.
Can't take you anywhere.
No, you can't. Absolutely not.
We can dress you up, but we can't take you anywhere.
It's the struggle bus. The struggle's real. It's Friday afternoon. The struggle is real.
It's Friday afternoon. I'm sure it's warm, hot, and humid in Detroit today.
Yes, it is. Nice and nice swampy weather. It's great.
Perfect. Yeah. Good for you. We had that. It's gone now. It's comfortably cool today.
Yeah, that'll be tomorrow. So, Brad, who do we have on the show today?
Well, we are honored to have Mr. Aaron Mills, who is the founder of Daxic, the contractor's CFO. I met one of his colleagues, Rob, at our Metropolitan Builders Association, and we connected through there. I'm like, he's going to be an awesome guest to have because his background is tremendous in the financial world. He's had oversight of contracting companies with $90 million in annual revenue and more. He's been part of Chicago's Business Fast 50. He's been in Inc.'s 5,000 fastest growing private companies. This one was, I don't know what this one is, but Engineering News Records, top 600 specialty contractors. Interesting. Are there more than 600 specialty contractors in the Engineering News Record book? I don't know. But ultimately, he's here in today's world with Daxic, who's a four-year-old company, to help contractors understand their dollars and cents so that they can be successful, so they can hire those Gen Zs, know when to hire those Gen Zs and Gen Xs, and when to fight all those other things. So we're very excited to have you, Aaron. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Steve. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday. So before I forget and mess this up, since it's been a hot minute, which generation do you best fit in with?
I'm glad you guys let me Google that. Generation X.
All right. Awesome. Tell us a little bit about the story and how you got started with Daxic.
Daxic.
Yes.
Well, so I've been in the construction, Daxic. Been in the construction industry for over 20 years. And really, the construction industry is, you know, brought up from the middle class. You know, a lot of people had some boots and had some tools, and all of a sudden they started their business and they've been successful. But a lot of these successful business owners pay themselves last and are still stuck in the middle class that the U.S. economy claims how great it is.
Thank you for tap dancing around the topic because it's not really a political show. So we have an opportunity, but you said that very, very politically correct as to the middle class scenario. So thank you for that.
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but the U.S. economy, 78% of the population live paycheck to paycheck.
That does not surprise me.
No, it does not surprise me, but it's a very interesting stat. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, these construction business owners run their business the same way.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, when you go into a contracting firm, construction firm, do you see them do you see them with a ton of cash, but they just don't know how to use it properly? Or are you seeing them truly operating the business as well from job to job, check to check?
So short answer is job to job, check to check. when you get, sometimes when your business does grow, you do have banks more involved, but really a business owner, the first thing that he thinks is, I got to get a job. And then the second thing that he thinks, or she, is, I got to get the job done. And then the last thing that they think is, did I make any money on the job? And that is the status of so many contractor businesses that once you start, I call it financial clarity, once you start understanding the money, what it takes to get a job done and paying yourself, then things start changing within your business.
And there's been a lot of opportunity for the post-COVID for those mid-millennials to leave larger organizations and go start out their own companies and do their things. And they think, I can do it better. I can do it better than the old man did. I can do it better than this. And it's super easy, all that fun stuff. How are you seeing within your client base the relationship with money across the generation? What's that relationship like? What do you see from fears, from excitement, from risk profile?
I would say one of the, and I find this kind of interesting, to one of the things that I realize and everybody's starting to say is, hey, the younger generation, you know, they don't want to work. And maybe that is a problem that kind of stemmed from, you know, from Generation X or from a prior generation, because, you know, prior generations are workaholics.
Correct.
So all of a sudden they see that their family has worked, you know, their whole life and didn't get to enjoy life. And I think that's a switch in the society that I think some people are not actually understanding why the new generation doesn't want to work 60 hours or 80 hours a week.
Correct. My youngest son, I just talked to him over Father's Day weekend. He had to work over the weekend and he's like, oh man, I got another 7 hours of overtime this weekend, like 7 hours in a 2 week period. I'm like, good for you. I mean, it's not, but he wants to work, go into work, work the 40 and we're done. And he understands he's going in to get the job done, but it's not like he's going to sit there at his desk just to clock hours like we used to. And let's make sure we get everything done and buttoned up, even though it didn't matter. So we're months ahead of workload when you didn't need to be, you know?
Right. So Aaron, walk us through a little bit when you just talked about how business owners, so you know, some of the contractors are doing job to job, check to check. And you brought up three key points, right? They get the job, they do the job, and did they make any money? So as we're walking through that scenario, what are some of those financial triggers that we need to be paying attention to as business owners that helps us get out of that cyclical rut? If you will.
Sure. Well, you know, business owners don't go to college and get an accounting and finance degree to run a business, right?
Right. Nope. They don't.
So the first thing is give yourself a break, business owner, right? I mean, you're the visionary, you know, you're the one that's going to put in all the hours to make sure that whatever needs to get done gets done. Right now, we have so many, you know, people out there that are experts that are in the field that that when you don't know something, don't be afraid to go ask questions and ask for help.
Right. Yeah. And so many business owners that are in this field are so proud of what they built. They're too afraid to ask for that help because they're too afraid to admit that, hey, there is something ugly in my business.
Right.
I don't know anything about.
Right.
But that's where we have to come alongside them, say, hey, great. You've done a fantastic job doing this. You're great at doing this. There's a lot of people out here like Aaron that can help support you in these other things.
Right. Right. And it's really awesome what happens when these lights click on, because, you know, these business owners are people too. So if the business is actually making more money, what do? They pay their employees more. Mm-hmm. They do holiday parties. You know, they do profit sharing. And it's not all a money thing, but what about safety? Now they're starting to investing in tools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what if you can do a job more efficient and, you know, then now you're not risking, you know, injuries on the job. So once a business owner is actually more profitable, they actually reinvest in the company, and the company actually transforms itself just for money.
Right. Right. Yeah. That landscaping company buys the, you know, the air hand, the air machine to lift brick instead of having three guys bust their back every day for, you know, 8 months out of the year. And now all of a sudden everybody's happier to go to work. And when your employees are happier to go to work, they will work better for you and they'll make you more money because they're happy to be there.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more when we talk about that younger generation component, and as Brad just brought up, you know, the investment into the business. What have you seen as business owners are able to invest in their business? How has that helped the younger generations, you know, apply themselves more?
Sure. And just as kind of Brad mentioned, like, you know, picking up a, you know, ton of bricks by your, you know, with your back is not the best practice. You know, everybody's talking about AI. There's a lot of technology in the construction industry that is coming through where projects are done a lot more simple. So now you can even hire people that have even a college degree or any kind of experience that's more technical, come into the construction industry and apply whatever they know.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get started in construction, Aaron?
Yeah.
Funny thing. So I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I went from a Fortune 500 company to a startup company in the Purdue Research Park, and our population was over 50% PhD in the company, but they didn't know anything about finance and how to grow, how to scale business. And I thought it was like, oh my gosh, you know, all these PhD people don't know how to grow and scale business. And I found my foot into the construction business, and I realized they were exact same people as the PhD people. Mm-hmm. There's really no difference. But the blue collar, you know, mentality, though, it's a different type of environment. And it's just somehow I connected to them because I never thought I was smart enough, good enough, because that's kind of just, you know, even construction people kind of think of that and be like, oh, I didn't go to college, you know. I'm not really that smart, but really these construction people have a very unique skill set that they are super smart and they are entrepreneurs. And to be honest, you know, I talk about entrepreneurship. Our construction industry is the one of the last entrepreneurship industry in the US right now. You think about it, everything else is getting taken over by the big companies. And I'm afraid that that's actually going to occur in the construction industry. But if you look at it, many construction companies are family owned businesses.
Mm-hmm. You're starting to see that in some of the specific trades where you've got conglomerates buying up roofing companies to nationalize or plumbing companies to nationalize or to vertically integrate into HVAC, electrical and plumbing, where it becomes very corporate versus that entrepreneurial opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How have you seen on that side of, I would say, the mergers and acquisitions, how have you seen that change in the last, since COVID, and in terms of the construction industry?
Honestly, I believe COVID kind of scared some construction business owners, and uh-huh. And it's probably not more so COVID, but it's probably more so what's changed is that a lot of these construction businesses are second generation, third generation, and now this generation really doesn't want to get into that construction business, which is probably what you guys are alluding to, is driving into how do I exit my business? And you have these other companies that want to, you know, grow. You know, there's a great opportunity for them to sell to these venture capitalists or whoever mm-hmm. wants to create these multiple billion-dollar companies.
How do you help your clients prepare for that opportunity when they're ready? Because as you know, right, when you go to sell a business, 3 out of 10 might make the cut, you know, so 7 out of 10 just need to shut down the doors, pull out whatever cash, fire sale, whatever that might look like. How do you help them be prepared for opportunity?
Well, I tell them to start early because it doesn't happen overnight. A lot of these construction businesses are what I call owner operator. So, you know, if you take the business owner out of the business, you know, what is the value of the business? And in a lot of these construction industries, it's, you know, it's not a business without the business owner. So you can't get much of a value for that company when you're doing everything. So to answer your question, I help them work on the business versus in the business. And I help them not to be the most important person in the business. So as they develop team around them that can function, business can run by itself. And you know, I got one business owner, it's kind of funny. He's like, oh, I want to retire and get out of this business. And we've worked on it to a place where now he's working a lot less hours. And he's like, well, maybe I don't have to sell the business.
Right. Because I'm able to get my cash and still have my life and not do all these things. Mm-hmm. We'll protect the innocent, right? So let's just use that gentleman as an example or lady. You've gotten to a point where they're able to build a team. What are some of the things that owner's facing to let go or transition activity and work to either a younger generation? If they're a boomer or X and they're hiring a millennial or Gen Z, or if it happens to be a millennial owner who's trying to let that boomer or Gen X person take the reins, how do you see, what's the dynamics you're helping them overcome, I guess, psychologically or you, financial tools you might be providing to say it's okay to let go?
This is one of my business owners, and he actually does let go quite a bit, but he says, I'm a really great truck driver, but it doesn't mean I'm driving the truck for my company.
Yep.
You know, one of the tools, not to go into details, I call it the 10-hour challenge. So it's how do you take 10 hours off your plate a week? And you think of things that, hey, I hate doing this. Hey, this is, if this frees up my time, I can do something that's more valuable. So I try to get the business owner to think out of the box where, like, hey, if you did have more time, what would you do? And, you know, even if it's working in the business, so I can just give myself an example. We hired internal CFOs for our company. Now I'm not doing all the CFO work. I could go out, get more business, and the company grows. But mm-hmm. on the flip side, I also said, I want to have a couple more hours of free time during the week to, you know, exercise or go play golf. So now my company, you know, doubled in size, and now I get to do these extracurricular activities. So I kind of get my ice cream and eat the pie at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
So this is going to be way off topic, but I see you are a Purdue guy. So what was your favorite meal at Triple X?
Oh boy. The burger with the peanut butter sandwich. Peanut butter on a burger.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
It's actually pretty good.
It is good. I've had it there. It was really good. I added bacon to mine. It was delicious.
That's awesome. So tell us about this Engineering News Records top 600 specialty contractors. I'm actually dying to know what that is.
Sure. So specialty contractors, so like there's different skilled trades in the construction mm-hmm. industry. You know, there's millwrights, there's electricians, there's plumbers. And the company that I worked for kind of is a pretty interesting story. So they were an electrical company, and the business owner, I coming in was like almost the last piece for the business owner kind of to just kind of move out of the business. So the last 3 years, the business was running around $30 million. And when the business owner actually stepped out and gave it what we call to the C-suite, which was the CFO, CEO, the COO, the three of us had a kind of like a different vision or where we could take the business. And all of a sudden, we tripled in size in 4 years and made the ENR, fastest growing, one of the fastest growing electrical companies in the U.S.
Nice.
That's spectacular. Isn't it amazing when the owner, who's usually the obstacle, gets out of the way as to what can happen?
Yeah.
Pretty spectacular.
I see that when I take a week off of work and I'd be like, oh, all that got done.
Right. So you've lived it, you've been through it, you've been on both sides of it. Mm-hmm. You now work your clients through it and you're living it on your own with your own business. How are you supporting your customers to be able to get them out of the way? And just your 10-hour challenge is awesome to be able to help facilitate that. But do you get sometimes just very pragmatic and say, just stop doing it and go give it to George? We're done. We're not messing around with this anymore. You're not signing invoices. You're not doing AP/AR work. You're not making collection calls. Go. That's why you have people. Get the hell out of the way. Do you get that argumentative sometimes with your clients at all or not?
Oh, man, I don't get argumentative. So I'm just persistent, to be honest.
Drop of water every day.
Yeah. You know, I am persistent. So, you know, in our meetings, so we meet routinely, and if they don't get over their hurdle, we just kind of rehash that hurdle. And then sometimes they'll just spark another light flash bulb will go off. And I could just give another quick example is, have a contractor where one person does the bidding and does majority of the work, and they're in their 60s and they're going to retire in 5 years. And I'm like, so you got this one person that's doing everything. And if they're going to retire in 5 years, you got nothing. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, well, we got 5 years to figure this out.
No, you have potentially tomorrow to figure it out, because if his spouse or significant other or whomever gets sick and he's able to be done, he's done.
Yep. Right. Exactly.
You have tomorrow to figure it out, particularly for a role.
Right. Ding dong him. And, one time he's like, oh my gosh, we got $3 million in this equipment. I go, well, what are you going to do with it if this guy's not here?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and then what we did is I was like, all right, so let's just take this off table and let's just have one strategic meeting about this topic and nothing else. And that's what we're going to do, is we're going to talk about how do we create that 5-year, 10-year plan today.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So Aaron, how do people find you? How do they get a hold of you? How do they get your services or a consult, or where do they go get you from?
Yeah. So just like everybody, we got a website, www.daaxit.com.
Okay. And how'd the name come about? I just need to know how the name came about for Daxic. How did you come up with the name?
Sure. As anybody probably starting a company, they like, oh, their name's got to be special. We're probably maybe a couple months into it trying to figure out a name. And we have a family dog that's a German Shepherd. And she is very, you know, kind of like the breed. She is smart. She's loyal. She's a family dog, protective. And, you know, we thought, well, what if we named it after the dog and her name was Dax? And I was like, well, that kind of sounds weird. Like, name it Dax, and then we're like, what about Daxit? I was like, that's it.
That's awesome.
That's where that came from.
There's always good origin stories to names every once in a while, yep. Right? It's always good. So we're glad that the dog will live forever in the name of the company. You know, that's a good legacy piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on that. So yeah, so thank you very much for being here. You got big plans for the weekend? Going golfing? Are you going golfing or not?
I am going golfing. Going golfing in a golf league. And then I'm sure we're going to spend some time out on the lake.
That's fantastic. Lake Michigan, that's, I'm awesome. Assuming?
Lake Elizabeth. We're right off of a lake in Wisconsin.
Okay, cool.
Nice. Awesome.
Thank you, Aaron, for taking time out of your busy Friday afternoon to be here when it's such a gorgeous day and we have very few of them. So we're going to let you get out of here so you can go enjoy the beautiful weather here in June in Wisconsin. So thank you very much for being here today.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.